We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, Dynasty Command Center Nation? Before we dive into episode 45, our fresh Combine Reaction Pod, risers and droppers and everything in between, I want to talk to you a little bit about our sponsor for today's podcast. It's Bet Online. March has arrived. We're only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, it's that tournament. March Madness is almost upon us. Make sure to head to BetOnline today. It's betonline.ag. Open an account. Get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest. It starts March 15th. That's right. I said 100 grand on March 15th. You don't have to be hardcore to get in on this action. And with multiple entries available, it's the season's best chance to cash in. I know, you know, even dating back to high school, we'd have like the illegal like cash under the table in the cafeteria. You know, how many brackets can you put in? You know, you're putting different kids' name on it, trying to increase your chances to win. BetOnline's making sure you can put those multiple entries in and increase your odds. Also, the NBA and XFL are still going strong. So whatever your passion is, BetOnline, it's the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, BetOnline, to take care of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Blue Wire. It's all one word, Blue Wire, for your 50% sign up bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right. Well, I'm Curtis Patrick, your faithful host. We've got Travis May, the faithful host. We're going to talk about the NFL Combine from last week. We really want to focus in on some risers and fallers. You know, not to the point that these guys are making huge bounces up or down the board, because, you know, the Combine is just additional player context, right? But I want to quickly hit on some players we're not going to talk about today. We're going to talk about them we're not going to talk about them, but we're going to talk about them. So Jonathan Taylor just comes in, smashes the Combine, just burns up the turf with a 4.39 40, absolutely just, you know, validating all of us who had him at the 101 pre-combine. It's impossible to double count the number one overall player, right, Travis?
Yeah, I mean, we all knew it was coming. I think the betting line was like 4-5-1 or something. So that was the easiest bet on any book you would probably find, just him coming in under that. But when you run that at his weight and put up three, you know, 2,000-yard seasons, I think he's okay.
Yeah, exactly. And so as elated as we were to see Taylor smash the combine, you know, at the same position, I was very frustrated that J.K. Dobbins didn't compete. And we're going to have to wait for those those Ohio State measurements. Hopefully, you know, hopefully that ankle's doing well enough, or, you know, he eats the right type of breakfast that morning, or whatever it is that he needs to do. I don't have doubts about J.K. Dobbins as a prospect. you know, him not being at the combine doesn't change his production or his film, but it was very disappointing to not get that early information, Travis.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people forgot that he really, you know, 2 months off of a high ankle sprain, and so people are thinking, oh yeah, man, if you sit out the drills at the combine, that just means you're unathletic. It's like, dude, he's not even 100%. Why would you force it? So I think we really just need to slow down, and just because we didn't find out anything more or get something to feed our confirmation bias, it's okay. It'll be fine.
Yeah, dropping Dobbins would be highly I think that's a bad move right now. This isn't a guy who we think was scared of it. I really do think he would have been one of the top athletes at the position, one of the top two to three athletes. So if anything, it might be a chance to get Dobbins a little cheaper, or one of those, you know, maybe that 103, 104 pick a little bit cheaper than you could have pre-combine. At the wide receiver position, you know, we didn't get to see T. Higgins compete. Mm.
Yeah, that would have been a lot of fun. I think he would have ran faster than what some people are talking about. Oh yeah, he just missed out because he runs like a 4.7, you know, just because he set out. But I think he's already proven his worth in some big moments, so I'm not worried, not about him either.
Yeah, I think it's another example of a buy opportunity on Higgins if he already exists in a league based off of, you know, what you're doing there. I do think, you know, he would have run a little bit slower compared to some of the bigger guy, the other big guys that were there. But he has the draft capital locked in. I mean, he's basically a consensus top 20 pick in mock drafts from all the major media outlets. So I really do think he had more to lose by running poorly than just by not running at all. And then on the total polar opposite side of the spectrum to the Jonathan Taylor win, you know, I was pretty disappointed in Jalen Reagor's 40 time. It makes me happy because he should be a little bit cheaper. I actually do think he will appreciably drop the excitement and energy that was out there for Jalen Reagor, due in great part to the two of us, but also from many of our friends in the industry who are high on him. It's almost like, you know, we set this high bar that we really wanted him to get to and thought he was capable of, and he still ran a pretty good time, not a time that's so slow that raises eyebrows, but, you know, it definitely fell short. You know, when we start talking about a guy who might have been a sub 4.3, even is where some of the chatter was getting, you know, running where he ran was a little bit disappointing. So I'm assuming he's not actually moving for you, Travis.
Oh no. I mean, it's just like, he's pretty thick and he may have even added some weight just for the combine to come in a little bit thicker. So, you know, running a 4.47 at 206, I'm not concerned at all. Yes, it's a disappointment given the hype surrounding it, but that's not slow at all. I mean, the average for the position is like 4.51-ish, so he's doing just fine. So he's faster on tape anyway, so I'm not worried whatsoever.
All right. So those are the guys that we didn't talk about but still talked about. Now let's get into... two, four, or five players here who are probably going to rise up our boards. You know, with a quick disclaimer here, you know, at RotoViz, this is volume 2 of the rookie guide, you know, compilation and formation week here. So, you know, we haven't fully set in, you know, our rankings on these players. How high might they move? Do they actually move in a tier? Is there a player who wasn't even ranked before, you know, that now gets into the top 50, those types of things? You know, those aren't fully known. But we've stared at this information, athletic information enough, to know who we need to do a little bit more, deep research on. And so we can at least tell you if we're leaning towards a rise or fall grade on some of these players. So we got to start with the human wrecking ball, AJ Dillon. AJ Dillon, Travis, weighed in at 247 pounds. And he ran a 4.53? He ran a 4.53. That's 63rd percentile 40-yard dash since year 2000 for running backs. But at that weight, man, at that weight, 117 speed score, extremely strong in the bench press. But where I was really impressed, it wasn't really, I mean, the 40 was great. It actually was a little faster than I thought he'd run. But what is so encouraging about Dillon, and it's hard to kind of tell with him, on tape and because of the level of competition at Boston College sometime, was the explosion. 97 and 98 percentile in the vertical jump and the broad jump for AJ Dillon at 6'2", 247. I mean, it was absolutely outstanding. He definitely blew me away. He'd kind of been hanging out there in kind of the mid to late second round. And I think that he has, you know, is very deserving of tier two running back consideration after that athletic performance, Travis.
Yeah, and I think some people were even, you know, third round rookie pick. I think some people that were really doubting his draft capital were even saying fourth round rookie pick. So I think he definitely deserves a little boost there. I mean, when you have 4-5-3, I mean, being in Nashville, people are talking about him and Derrick Henry because Derrick Henry was 6'3", 247, you know, and had a 4.54. So it's so close. And, you know, you got the contract situation of Henry, and like people are like, oh, just draft AJ Dillon. So there's clearly a hype train with him. And if he gets that day two draft capital that we typically like to see, man, it's going to be tough to keep him out of the top, you know, 12 to 15 picks in most rookie drafts, I think, especially if he lands in a sexy spot with some opportunity. So it's good to see him take off. And it's funny that he really predicted this on Twitter, I think like 2 years ago, that he would come in pretty near exactly the numbers that he got. I think he nailed his vertical on the spot, just barely missed it with the 40 prediction. So it's fun to see that kind of thing happen where a player's that confident and then they just actually pull it off. So just really excited for a player who's really come a long way from the beginning.
Yeah, and I'm wondering too, even in just a year, how much other NFL teams might be more willing to deploy a player like this after the success that Derrick Henry had behind the Tennessee line last year. And it really is remarkable how close they were across the board. I mean, it's really not unfair to say at this point that AJ Dillon, at least athletically, is a more compact, slightly more explosive version of Derrick Henry. And if you, right. And so that is, you know, when you boil it down to those terms, it's pretty exciting to imagine what the possibilities could be at the next level. So another guy who just kind of came out of nowhere, more so than Dillon, who had the name brand, but, you know, we maybe doubted how athletic he really was Antonio Gibson. Antonio Gibson, primarily a running back at Memphis in a very crowded running back room there, but he tested as a wide receiver at the combine. A very nice, very thick, 228 pounds, and just blazed at 4.39 in the 40. That was really the story with him. Kind of a mixed bag of results in the other events. Actually does not look overly explosive under the 50th percentile with a vert and broad there, but 92nd percentile, 40-yard dash. Gives him a freak score of 79. You actually compute a freak score on him since he did test as wide receiver. But you know, his closest comp, you're going to like his closest comp in the RotoViz Combine Explorer, Travis. It's AJ Brown. He was same height, 2 pounds heavier, a tenth of a second faster. Now, yeah. Of course, you know, he didn't actually play the position in college, but you know, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. I mean, he was weird. Cause I mean, he was like a wide receiver that could be a deep threat on some plays, but also line up in the backfield and did a little bit of everything, whatever he was asked to do. He didn't even have 100 touches this past season, but it didn't matter. He still just made huge plays. And I think his yards per touch was over 10, you know, being a hybrid, just, you know, playmaking threat type dude. So I think a lot of people thought he was going to, you know, show out with the running backs, but he actually chose to be a wide receiver. So I don't know what he's going to be at the next level, but yeah, I mean, if he really would have impressed more so if he would have been with the running backs, because he would have tied Jonathan Taylor and actually gone before Jonathan Taylor, just because they do it alphabetically. He would have ran that 4.39 before they even got to Jonathan Taylor. So I think there would have been a lot more hype if he was just running with the running backs this past week. But I think a lot of people that are savvy to the situation understand that might be his position anyway, and he could be that kind of late rising David Johnson type threat that gets you know, some day two capital and ends up going pretty early in drafts. So I actually had him inside my top 30 rookie rankings, even with some IDP prior to this, just anticipating his dominance at the combine. So he didn't move up a bunch for me just because it's kind of a confirmation of what I already knew, but definitely a player I'm super excited about now that I really believe he's going to get some capital going with it.
Yeah, he'll definitely be a mover. He was outside the top 50, did not appear in volume one of our Dynasty Commands and Rookie Guide. So you can be sure that Antonio Gibson will be making an appearance in that next issue that'll drop sometime this weekend or early next week. A player that's going to definitely be moving up my board, I don't know how high yet, but definitely, is Denzel Mims. Now, I was highest on the team on Denzel Mims coming into the combine, but that had nothing to do with his athleticism per se. It was more just based off his production profile. And he had kind of a weird college situation, you know, gotten a little bit of trouble here and there. But if you just look, you know, and he was an older kid coming into school, age 19 freshman, that went on the books there. But he broke out at age 20 with a 33% dominator rating there at Baylor, over 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns as a sophomore. And actually posted 3 straight years with over a 30% dominator.
Yeah.
Capped it off with a 43% dominator as a senior this year.
Oh, yeah.
Older senior. One of the older guys coming in. And we like our young prospects at Rotoviz. But this guy did break out. I mean, he easily broke out before age 21, which is what we're really, you know, looking for. Doesn't get that extra boost from being pre-age 20. But Denzel Mims, I mean, he really checks all the boxes now because he checked all those production boxes, but when you add in the athleticism, I mean, he is an across the board stud. Travis, 6'3", 207, 4.38 in the 40.
Yeah. 90th percentile right there.
And yeah. 93rd percentile. Yeah.
Yeah.
And super explosive, jumped over the entire broad jump course, 93rd percentile, 84th percentile vert, 94th percentile three cone. You know, sometimes maybe with these real bursty guys, they don't still have that same agility. And he still managed to be shifty. I mean, Denzel Mims is going to be flying up everyone's boards. And you know, I know that'll be the truth that Rotoviz as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, and really I was kind of pumped just at his adjusted production index, how that settled in. He was fifth in this class, basically a 75th percentile, overall production score. The way I slice it up in terms of his adjusted dominator, yards per team pass attempt, touchdowns per team pass attempt, really almost every angle you look at his profile, there's something to get excited about. And you mentioned the three cone. He was like the only wide receiver that didn't have an embarrassing three cone there. Just with the new moving to prime time, it felt like everybody forgot how to move their hips once it got to like 11:30. But
Yeah, you get used to just getting locked in on the couch there, and these guys weren't ready for it. It is really weird that happened.
Yeah,
you know, I bet a lot of these guys will significantly improve their three cones at their pro days.
Oh, so they have to. I mean, it was like a full, almost collectively they were almost like 2 full tenths slower than we typically see a wide receiver class. Like they were off by, it was just a major out. Like we've never seen times this slow in the three cone, which was just bizarre. So it'll be interesting to see if they adjust the schedule and how they kind of do agility testing maybe next year if they do choose to keep it in prime time.
Now, if you want to go for cheaper Denzel Mims, so, and this would probably be like, you know, maybe the second most movable player after the NFL Combine, just because we know that the draft pedigree is going to be different now.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because we think of him differently from a profile standpoint. It's more chasing the draft pedigree with a player like this. It's Chase Claypool. So Chase Claypool also measured amazing across the board, actually did not turn in a three cone, but was above the 80th percentile and 40 bench vert and broad, and actually had a 94th percentile vert, 4.42 at 6'4", 238. So another tall guy, but much thicker than Mims. And, you know, the production, he did have a breakout as a senior, 33% dominator as a senior at Notre Dame this year. So it's better to break out than to not break out. But we didn't see it until pretty late. You know, I know you've taught me over the last couple of years. I mean, Notre Dame hasn't exactly had the best quarterback situation to deal with there. But even with a bad quarterback, you can still break out. Jalen Reagor showed us that. And so, that's a pretty... That's a glaring mark on Chase Claypool that makes me want to slow my roll. But he's definitely going to move up my board.
Yeah. I mean, he basically always was just somehow, he found a way to be second fiddle, no matter who was playing with him. Whether it was Equanimeous St. Brown, who ended up being a way late round guy, Miles Boykin, who was a later breakout guy who got some capital last year. But yeah, to do what he did at his size is just kind of absurd. It's basically him and Calvin Johnson and nobody else that have been able to do what he did overall with his vert and his speed at that size. It's just unreal. And he does hit minimum thresholds for production, especially peak production, about the 60th percentile, looking at it that way, which is basically around the minimum of what we want to see. But that players like AJ Brown barely met the minimum threshold on the adjusted production index last year as well. So I definitely did move him up my board, just because I think he's going to get drafted now higher than I thought. So we'll see. Maybe the NFL proves me wrong. Maybe they don't care as much about the NFL combine, but I definitely could see things changing. But another guy for sure that's going to be rising up draft boards most likely, even if we are kind of double counting because we kind of knew it was coming, is Donovan Peoples-Jones for Michigan. Obviously, it doesn't help to have Shea Patterson as your quarterback if you've been watching college football for very long, or just the Michigan offense in general. But Donovan Peoples-Jones, he was basically what, 100th percentile in the vert, 100th percentile in the broad, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, 99 percentile and change in both of the jumps, and ran pretty well. 212 was his way in, and was sub 4.5 with the 4.48. So definitely, kind of almost at a top quartile level.
Yeah.
For the 40, the problem that I have with Peoples-Jones, compared to the last two guys that we talked about. So now we're talking about three bigger guys. You know, Peoples-Jones, not as big as the other two, but three bigger guys, 6'2 and above. He just never did anything. He never did anything at Michigan. He scored some touchdowns. If you were to look at, a weighted dominator, an adjusted dominator, wouldn't have been anywhere near a 30, the 30% that we're looking for. He managed 27%.
Yeah.
As a sophomore because of 8 touchdowns. But, I just want to use Rager as a comparison. I mean, Michigan was throwing the ball, and we still didn't get, they were, it's not like they handed the ball off every time.
No.
If Peoples-Jones really was, this type of athleticism should have shown up. Now, he has some great highlights. If you want to look up his highlights, he has a few, but he's playing Big Ten competition, Big Ten corners. The bottom half of the Big Ten is not anything to write home about. Obviously, the top half is as good as any other, conference in the country. But it just concerns me to get overly hyped about a guy who never crested 581 receiving yards in a season, that's testing so good athletically. And so, Peoples-Jones is a guy that seems like NFL draft Twitter and the media was high on all along. Like, I've been scratching my head throughout this whole process when I see him mocked in the second round consistently. And I think it's just a guy that, I was just totally ignorant to the noise because I just thought it was so ridiculous that he would get mocked there. But I think the athleticism probably does. It's probably confirmation bias for those guys. And so I'm going to move him up. I don't feel good about it. He's not going to move up super high. He's not tier one or even a tier two receiver now. But I think he's going to be, he's probably going to get late round two consideration for me, by the time I turn in these ranks, or maybe right at 2-3 turn. Whereas I barely had him in my top 50 in the first version of the guide.
Yeah, I still don't think I'm going to sneak him in my top two rounds myself. But yeah, you want to see a guy do something. And really, it would have been one thing if he was like a 3-star guy that kind of had to climb his way up the depth chart and prove himself. And then he kind of broke out somewhat. But I mean, he was the 5-star stud. He was supposed to come in and make an instant impact and didn't do that. He didn't even score a touchdown in his first season for Michigan. And in second season, he was just all over the place with an inconsistency. And his last season, I mean, people like to make fun of Henry Ruggs for being the wide receiver 3 on his own team. Peoples-Jones was the wide receiver 3 on his own team this past year. I mean, like, really. And that's not like with these crazy studs either. I mean, it's like Ronnie Bell and Nico Collins. Like, I like Nico Collins, but I don't think he's going to be a great pro. So it's just, I don't know. It's hard to get excited about him, but he is going to be rising in just across the, you know, general perception for sure. So it's going to be hard to not rank him higher just when he does get that draft capital probably.
Right. And I think the 2-3 turn area is ultimately where he lands if he gets day two draft cap. I mean, he's going to get – he locked in day two draft capital, in my opinion, coming from a major program and performing at the combine like he did. I think it would be an upset if he wasn't around 3 draft pick. And so it's a little bit of reading the tea leaves and going against – you know, it's he goes in that cluster of guys that don't meet the, you know, the analytics thresholds that I would prefer to have. Using our process at RotoViz, but then you kind of lump them in there that, okay, well, they missed all these other check boxes, but they have draft capital. All right, there's where those guys go. And then we move on to the guys that don't have any draft capital at all. So those are some guys who are going to be moving up for Travis and I to varying degrees. Maybe a little bit more so in AJ Dillon's case, confirming what we thought some upside could have been. The other guys, I think you'll see appreciably move. Let's quickly hit some droppers.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend too much time on it because, again, a poor combine performance, if you have the film and the production, you know, doesn't mean you're not going to get the draft capital anymore. You know, we saw people like Devin Singletary fall on their face last year and still go day two and then actually still look pretty good as an NFL player. And so, you know, again, the combine is just context. If you are high on any of these players that we're going to talk about, doesn't mean they're dead. If they still get the draft capital, I'm certainly not giving up on the players on this list that I liked. But I think, you know, they may get jostled around a little bit within the tier that they were in. And I think the big headliner here, Travis, has to be Zach Moss.
Absolutely.
Zach Moss showed up as Pro Football Focus's RB1 in their NFL draft guide. And it's because there are some things that he did on film and that showed up on their stat sheet in terms of being elusive, that he basically was one of the best running backs they've ever charted when it comes to forcing missed tackles. And his combine performance doesn't suggest that he should have been able to do that, but that it's on film. I mean, he actually did it. So, you know, we have to take it with a grain of salt, but, you know, this is basically like a higher profile edition of what happened to Singletary last year. Moss was basically a bottom quartile athlete across the board other than the bench, which doesn't translate as much to the NFL. It, you know, really, I think I've heard some NFL scouts say that it just shows us how hard a player is willing to work. That's really why they do the bench press. But Zach Moss, you know, looks like a pretty poor athlete compared to his peers across the board, which is exactly what happened to Singletary last year. Singletary still goes on day two, still goes to the Bills, gets his chance. Could certainly happen to Zach Moss, but I think this talk of him entering tier one with those other guys is dead, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely dead. Had his 4.7 that they had on TV initially stuck, he would have been dead. But he's
4.7.
Yeah, I know.
Oh man.
So he's not dead, but you know, and his 4.65 is kind of it's redeemable, but it's, you know, now more Jeremy Hill-ish than it is Kareem Hunt-ish. So I'm not sure that I'm going to get excited about a player like that. But if he sneaks into the back end of day two, like, you know, Alexander Mattison or Devin Singletary, and he's not in a horrible spot, he's going to stay around two and be in that area. But he's definitely not a top-tier back. So, yeah.
A back that we weren't as excited about that had been gaining a little bit of late-round dart momentum going into the NFL Combine as a trendy player was Salvon Ahmed from Washington. This is a guy who needed to come in and blaze. He either needed to come in and blaze or show up like amazing in shuttle and three cone. Well, he didn't do the shuttle or the three cone. He weighed in at 197, sub 6 foot, and then he posted a 4.62 in the 40.
Yikes.
Yeah, not great. 4.62, I mean, we've seen backs like that succeed, but with this weight, you would want him to be a burner or just show up as like otherworldly agile.
Yeah, do so something.
Give us anything to be excited about, man. It's pretty frustrating. You know, I know there are some guys on our team who are pretty high on Ahmed. I think Blair Andrews really liked Ahmed, and so he's on my radar really just for that sole reason. But we've really got to see what happens at Pro Day, I think, with his agility numbers. And if he looks pedestrian there, he gets pushed way down into just basically dart throw territory instead of trendy sleeper.
Yeah, and even at this point, he's just absolutely a lock for late round draft capital, if anything. So disappointing to say the least. But a couple wide receivers. I mean, we did have one bet on a certain wide receiver. I don't know if it was homerism or what it was, overconfidence on your part that got you betting KJ Hill. But yeah. You know, we bet that KJ Hill, I think I bet that he would be slower than 4.48, and then you bet that he would be faster than 4.48. I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I owe you $20. I've got it right here. It's fine. I live in the Central Ohio area. I'm able to get some good intel on testing on some of the Ohio State players, and you know, I know for a fact, you know, he'd run hand time 40s, you know, sub, you know, really pushing 4.4, and certainly well under 4.5. And you really want these guys to run well at the combine. They should be in tip top shape, running as well as they're possibly going to. And he just didn't turn in a good time. I mean, it's very much like the Jalen Reagor situation. I was a little overconfident in the 40. It's fine. I own it. He ran a 4.6. You're $20 richer. It does not change my KJ Hill stance. And if anything, I think some NFL teams may be happy that that's the number he put up. I mean, running out of the slot like he's going to run, it's about timing. It's about footwork. Mm-hmm. It's about creating separation. And straight line 40 speed does not necessarily equate to any of those things. We've seen guys, you know, run unimpressive 40s. Like Keenan Allen, like Jarvis Landry, that work in that area of the field, and it hasn't bothered them, you know, a bit. There's other reasons that other people don't like KJ Hill. We've talked a lot about why I do, but his 40 doesn't scare me off. I'm just mad about my $20.
And no, it'll be all right. But it would have been nicer to see him do something a little bit more, more sexy at the combine. Just because, I mean, he had all that Senior Bowl hype and catching one handed passes and all that, but. You know, he's. I doubt he's going to be a day two pick now, personally. But we'll see what happens with KJ Hill. But
I think the line was always round 3-4, and unfortunately, it's probably more of a round 4 guy now.
Yeah, most likely. And before we sign off and maybe take a victory lap on a tight end, Juwan Jennings and Quintez Cephas were two names that I think some people wanted to see what they could do at the combine, just because they really play physically. They've made some big plays in big games against tough competition. I mean, they're pretty much dead now, running, you know, worse than 4.7 in the 40. I mean, that's like, you know, slower than most of the tight ends in this class for both of them. So that's not a great look for Jennings and Cephas. Sorry if you guys are their fans, but they're probably off the radar and really late round guys at this point. Do you see anything different there, Curtis?
Well, the only thing that was interesting was Cephas. No, I mean, I agree. I mean, the testing numbers were brutal. The thing that I thought was really interesting, Cephas came up. They were interviewing a corner. It'll come to me in a minute.
It was Okuda, I think.
Yeah, it was Jeffrey Okuda from Ohio State. They were asking him, you know, because he's played against a lot of great receivers. I mean, especially think about some of the playoff games that Ohio State's been in during Okuda's career.
Yeah.
He's played against the Clemson guys in particular. He said Quintez Cephas was the best wide receiver that he ever guarded in college.
Probably because he punched him in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, that. So somebody's writing that down, and I mean, that's going to get talked about. That's going to get talked about in every scouting circle. They're going to go back and look at, you know, what was Okuda, you know, okay, did these guys, like, you know, they go high school together, or like, you know, they're like secret third cousins, or did, you know, did he actually figure out a way to get a leg up on Okuda? But yeah, I think I mostly agree. There's far less to be excited about there, and not because they had a subpar combine versus expectations. They were just like actually subpar athletes. That's the problem there. But I last time we had a pod, I took a victory lap on pronouncing this name.
You gonna try it again?
Actually, Travis Albert Okwuebunam.
There we go.
It just rolls off the tongue, man.
Way better than Rich Eisen. Way better.
Yeah, Albert Okwuebunam. I've been teaching people on other pods, and you know we're gonna get this guy out there. He's been my tight end one all along, and he came in, and what he did, Travis, is he came in, and you know he weighed in and he got measured, so he weighed in at 258.
Yeah.
Very healthy for 258. Looked great. Measured 6'5". And then he just went and blazed a 4.49 40 and went home. He didn't do anything else.
Yeah.
Anything else after that? But
didn't need to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's got to be a day two lock now, right?
Yeah. I mean, he has to be. I think he was already getting mocked there in a lot of places, along with Hopkins, along with Bryant, and Cole Kmet. But I think Okwuebunam is definitely going to be up there. Just because that elite speed and size combo, along with his touchdown percentage in college, he just does a lot of things really well. So, yeah, I think he was a top two or three tight end for us for a long time, probably a couple of years for both of us. So it's great to see that we can brag about being right about one more thing. We'll just ignore all the wrong stuff, though.
Yeah. Nah, we took some L's here. I had to take more than you, but. You know, I think it just going back to the Rotoviz Combine Explorer for one last thought on Okwuebunam. You know, these guys that are in this height, weight, speed range have really panned out. They've just really panned out in the NFL. So I'm just going to go down about the top 10 to 12 names here. And, you know, hit rates slightly above 50%. And the hits have been like really good hits. So Ben Watson is actually his top comp. He's not the blocker that Ben Watson is. You know, that's like sacrilege. But Okwuebunam and Ben Watson is a tenured pro. I mean, what is he like, 35, 36 years old? He hung around forever because of this combination. Jordan Cameron, who obviously did not get the draft capital that Okwuebunam will have, but popped for, you know, that season in Cleveland a few years ago. Jimmy Graham, Jared Cook, Greg Olsen, OJ Howard, Travis Kelce, Noah Fant, Mike Gesicki, you know, all guys on the first page for Albert Okwuebunam. So, you know, jury's still out on a couple of those guys, but obviously some of them have been perennial fantasy studs. So I would say energy and excitement for this player should be rising in the dynasty community.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's fun to talk about a player like that has a fun, cool name that we get to listen to announcers mess up for about the next 3 or 4 years. So that's going to be a blast. It was hilarious just trying to listen to Rich Eisen say his name. but that's probably about all the time we have for this episode. And definitely be looking for the next edition of the Rookie Guide here. We are really pumped to get that out here soon. I'm actually in process of writing about some defensive players for all you individual defensive playing fantasy football nerds like myself. I know we're rehashing some rankings here, doing some mock drafting and some other cool, unique content for the second edition. So it's not too late to get that and really have this next edition and the post-draft edition for the Rookie Guide. So check that out here soon. But we'll be podcasting more about these rookies in the near future. But until next time, keep living that dynasty life.